Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
No battle of LA. Clippers have been eliminated. Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. How about that last night? I don't think I've ever seen Twitter erupt following a team being eliminated like I did last night. I mean, the Clippers were flat out getting hammered every which way on social media last night. And I think that's proof of everyone just getting tired of this squad and the foregone conclusion that everyone, every pundit, said at the beginning of the year that this was the Clippers' year. There's no way anyone could beat this Clippers team. Kawhi Leonard was playing at another level. It was supposed to be the year of the Clippers. And then along came the Denver Nuggets, who recovered once again from a 3-1 deficit. So we'll talk about this game in depth. And like I said, we have a very, very packed show today because we have to talk some Major League Baseball. We have games going on right now. The Dodgers and the Padres are going at it. And the Dodgers are up in this one 3-1. It's a battle of the two best teams in the National League. The Dodgers took last night's contest after the Padres had defeated them 2 days ago. And now the Dodgers with the lead in the fifth inning. So we want to talk Major League Baseball. I want to talk about the American League and the New York Yankees, who have figured it out, at least it seems. The Yankees back at a second place in the AL East. They're going to go to the playoffs, and it just seems like they have figured it out offensively. So Bill Lasky will join us a little bit later on in the show for his Wednesday segment as we talk all things Major League Baseball. Tom Perkins, independent NBA scout and founder of HoopCityNews.com, will join us later on in the show as well. We'll talk Clippers, we'll talk Lakers Nuggets, we'll talk Heat Celtics. We'll jump around the NBA. And on the local sports front, we're going to be joined by Coach Robbie Etzel of the Carbon Dino Golf Squad. Carbon yesterday, a third-place finish in Moab. You can get the complete results from yesterday's meet right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. And we'll give you the updates on everything that's happening on the local front, some of the scores from yesterday with tennis results and soccer as well. So a loaded Drive Time Sports. It's coming up in just a moment. We'll take a quick commercial break. When we return, we'll be joined by Coach Robbie Etzel of the Carbon Dino Golf Team right here on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports.
What you listening to?
Big sports radio guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're going to talk high school golf here today on the Coach's Corner. Yesterday, the Region 12 season continued as Carbon and Emory both traveled on the road. They went to the Moab Golf Club, and now only two region meets actually remain before the state championship tournament. We'll talk about yesterday right now with head coach Robbie Etzel, who's joining us over the phone right now from Carbon High School. And Coach, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Yep, it's always good to talk to you, Jordan.
Coach, we'll dive right into it. Yesterday, just looking at the scores, I mean, Richfield takes home first place at 346. Grand comes in second at 349, and then Carbon in third at 357. It seemed that pretty much everyone did have their fair share of struggles yesterday, and unfortunately for Carbon, the Dinos end up in third place at 357.
Yeah, we had discussed as a team, once everybody kind of came into the clubhouse yesterday, I don't know what it was, but everybody kind of got off to an extremely slow start, kind of showed up the Moab a little flat-footed. I know Bodie Salas comes in at a 79, if I'm not mistaken, which on the day was tied with Moab's number one is for the low. And I think he took a 9 on his first hole. So, I mean, we just couldn't catch a break coming out of our first couple holes there, and then it just kind of got a little discouraging with the boys as the day went on, and I don't think the Moab heat helped either, but yeah, we definitely had our fair share of struggles yesterday.
It's a tough course, and in talking with Coach Casey Edgehouse of Emory High School, he said there's a lot of similarities between Moab and Millsite, Emory's home site. He said, you know, you got to make sure sometimes you got to keep the driver in the bag, otherwise you can find yourself in a lot of problems. Was that an issue at all yesterday? Should the boys have kept the driver in the bag maybe a little bit more often?
Oh, 100%. I talked with my boys on the ride home yesterday, and you know, I mentioned to them the fact that we're kind of spoiled here at Carbon. We have beautifully manicured fairways. The rough is in great shape. And for the most part, you can hit driver on a lot of the holes. Now, when you travel to these courses like Monticello, Moab, Millsite, for example, these kids have an advantage in that they're used to hitting their long irons off the tee, because you can't hit driver. You shouldn't pull driver. And our boys, I think, struggle in the fact that at Carbon, 90% of the time, if it's a 4 or 5, you can hit driver off the tee, and they're just not used to having to lay up on holes that are 300-400 yards.
Well, still, you guys get a solid performance from Bodie Salas. I know Bodie ties for the low score of the meet with Wyatt Tony from Grand. They both shoot a 79, and then after that, we had three scores into the 90s. And so, you know, even a 79 for Bodie as of late, a 79 is a tad bit high.
Yeah, you could tell. I think when you start off, especially in golf, struggling at the beginning of your meet, that mental game's kind of the part that you have to overcome. And me and him talked about this. You know, it's one thing if you're playing great golf and then halfway through your round you start to struggle with a few things, but it's difficult, especially if you're pulling driver off the tee, hit a couple out of bounds right out of the gate. That's a big hurdle to overcome. And I was proud of him, you know. I didn't get a chance to see what happened on the first hole. I'm kind of glad I wasn't there. I could tell he was a little frustrated. But, you know, just to be 4 over on, you know, through one, and then to finish out the round a couple over par, more or less, is what he did, I thought was a great achievement for him, because that was a big mental hurdle he had to overcome, and I thought he did extremely well.
Darren Gardner shoots a 92. Kyler Clark shoots a 94. Brandon Scoville shoots a 92. I mean, obviously, Coach, you got to get some scores down into the mid-80s if you want to compete for a state championship. But still, you and I were talking off the cuff. These kids that are shooting in the 90s, they are capable of giving you guys scores good enough to compete with some of the best teams in the state. It's just kind of a funk at the moment.
Yeah, I think it is. There's a couple kids on the team just struggling with a little bit of kind of the mechanic side of their swing. They just worked some issues into their swing these last couple matches, and you can tell by looking at their scores that they're struggling a little bit. But overall, I mean, they're a group of kids who are more than capable enough to shoot in the 300s to the 320 range. That's kind of where I expected them to be this year. I think a little bit of it as well is just being such a young team. Yeah, that's one of those things, you know, we talk about course management. I preach course management to these kids. I'm just knowing when you should hit driver and when you shouldn't, when you should punch out, when you should go for it. And I think they'll come to grasp that a little more as they mature throughout their high school career. So,
again, our guest right now as we continue to talk Carbon High School Golf, we have Coach Robbie Etzel on the phone with us. And Coach, now sitting in third place as we get down to the final couple of competitions of the season, it's not insurmountable. I mean, it's a 37-stroke deficit against Richfield. We have seen stranger things happen. You guys will now go to Millsite. Millsite's a tough course. I mean, if you guys can put together a solid round where you can shoot in the 330s, you may be right there to still claim a region championship.
You know, and they do. They have enough time ahead of them with two matches left. It's good for me to see that they played well at Morgan at the beginning of the year. I hope they could go back up there for our region championship and play just as well. And the nice thing about playing at Millside is one of our last tournaments of the year is it's close enough that we can travel. I'm hoping to bring the boys over there sometime in the coming week, at least give them an opportunity to play maybe even just nine holes to see how the greens are rolling and how to play some of those little trickier holes that they have over there at the Millside Golf Course.
Is there any way that you can simulate what you may see at Millsite when you're practicing at the country club? I mean, is that something that you're able to do, Coach?
You know, in the past when we've played some of these little tighter courses, fairways are a little smaller with trouble on both sides of the fairway. The closest way you can kind of mimic it at home is just to have these kids hit a lot of irons off the tee, especially when we're practicing on the front nine here at Carbon. Forces you to hit longer irons into the greens. It also forces you to put that driver away and get used to hitting clubs that more often than not, you're not going to have an opportunity to swing too many times here at our home course. So I'll definitely have these kids at the driving range this week and practicing with those long irons because they're going to need to have those kind of fine-tuned if they want to go into Millsite and shoot well this coming week.
It is one of the closer courses when we look at Region 12 front to back. I mean, are the kids familiar with the course?
I have a few kids who've had an opportunity to go over and play. I played there earlier in the year. I think Casey's done a pretty good job, especially with as dry as it's been, taking care of the course. If the boys can keep it out of trouble and just learn to put that driver away and only hit it on two or three holes, they should have no problem shooting in the 80s over in Millsite.
Still a hefty lead over Grand for that that second spot, Coach. So in your mind, have you set a goal for the kids on where they need to be coming out of Millsite to have a chance to come back and win this, the region championship and the final meet at Morgan?
You know, it's tough to put a number in these kids' head. I just kind of preach for them to go out there and play the best that they can on any given day. Sometimes you get so fixated on shooting a particular number that you focus more on it than your own game. So I think the boys in the back of their minds know how many strokes they need to make up in these next couple matches to take that Region 1 spot there or that first place spot there in Region 12. Overall, I would just love to see them kind of get their things figured out over the next couple matches and just get ready for states. I'm at the point I could care less about the first place in Region 12. I would love to see these boys play well enough at their first day at the state championship to qualify for the second, and I think that should be kind of our goal going forward.
No, I love it, Coach. I honestly do. I mean, typically the first thing we always talk about is a region championship, and so it's a different perspective, and ultimately at the end of the day, you play for a state championship and go deep into the tournament. I mean, that's why you play, right?
And that's, I mean, I've had my fair share of heartbreaks as a team at the state championship. I've already had this talk with the boys. I told them I will be there for the second day. I says, I know Bodie Salas will qualify for the second day. I says, as an individual, I would love for us as a team, especially where I can only take my top six guys, it's not like the eight that we're bringing to our region matches, I would love for our team to make the cut for the second day because it's great experience for this young group of kids, and there's nothing like a state championship. There really isn't.
Well, Coach, I definitely appreciate you taking out the time to join us again to give us an update on the team. Best of luck next week, and again, I'm always appreciative of your time. Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you, Jordan. It's always a pleasure.
We got a break for just a moment, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We're going to move over to talk NBA basketball. Last night, we had quite the upset. The Denver Nuggets taking out the Los Angeles Clippers. Plus, we'll talk some Major League Baseball as well. It's all straight ahead right here on Drive Time Sports.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. You listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
It was a bizarre night in the NBA, to say the least, as one of the heavyweights come crashing down. The Clippers blowing a 3-1 series lead to the Denver Nuggets, and now we have a rematch of the 2009 Western Conference Finals, Lakers-Nuggets Game 1 Friday night. Also Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals in the books. Jimmy Butler did some magic deep into that contest. Bam Adebayo came up with a huge, huge block at the end of the contest to secure it for the Heat. And we'll talk about all of that and more right now with our next guest, Tom Perkins. He is an independent NBA scout and also the founder of HoopCityNews.com. And Tom, as always, it is a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time again. Thank you.
I can't wait. This is always a pleasure to me to be on your show.
Well, I always look forward to it, Tom. And again, we have a lot to talk about. First off, Twitter, I don't believe, has slept in close to 24 hours in anticipation, not only for Game 7, but then the outcome of it. The Clippers, they have a slim, I believe they led by 8, if memory serves me right, in the first half. They hold a 2-point lead at halftime. And then we just watch a Clipper team completely fall on their face in the fourth quarter. Paul George, Kawhi Leonard combined for 0. Tom, they scored as many points as you and I did in the fourth quarter of this game. They shoot 10 of 37 from the field, and the Nuggets rout Doc Rivers and company in Game 7. I was astonished, and I will admit that going into Game 7, I picked the Clippers just because they have the best player in this series in Kawhi Leonard, and that's typically the way I will lean in Game 7s. I want to go with the team that has the best player that can take over a moment. Kawhi Leonard did not take over a moment, and he was not the best player in last night's game.
No, he wasn't even the third best player. I mean, it's astonishing, but... You know, when you have a group like you have with the Clippers with that kind of talent and that kind of reputation, and, of course, they gained their reputation just this year, with the exception of Kawhi, he's gained the reputation before this year, you would think that they would withstand what Denver did to them, but they didn't. And the reason why they didn't is because Doc Rivers lost the rhythm of the game. He committed the number one coaching crime, and he lost the rhythm of the game. And what I mean by that, by the way, I'm one of the very few people that actually uses that phrase. I've always used it for years. But the rhythm of the game is if you're up 19 and suddenly you're up only 10, and you lost 9 points there, you've lost the rhythm of the game. Now, I watched Doc Rivers during timeouts when he was losing those leads in the third quarter. And he was trying to coach him, go back to how you were playing before. No, that's not what you coach. And the best analogy that I've ever come up with, I always use the tennis analogy. If you're a serve and volley player, you serve, you get your fanny to the net, and you put it away. Serve, volley, done. Like Pete Sampras used to do and some of those guys, McEnroe. Anyway, if you're a serve and volley player and you come to the net and your opponent is whizzing by left and right, screaming shots for points, you've got to change your game. You might have to go baseline for a moment or two. And Doc did not change the game because he lost the rhythm of the game. And whether it's a trap here, a trap there, a different offensive look, maybe a little box and one, there's a bunch of things you can do to stop that kind of avalanche that that Denver submitted to the Clippers. So, that's a shame because they did not have the true veterans to stop it. And I'll give you an example of that. When Doc won the whole thing in 2008, he had 4 guys that would not allow him to make that mistake. He had Kevin Garnett, Rajon Rondo, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce. Those 4 guys, it doesn't matter what Doc said, they were going to make sure they kept control of the rhythm of the game. He did not have those kind of intelligent players.
Okay,
so that's the biggest problem of the loss of the Clippers, which is probably going to mark the end of the Doc Rivers era.
So let me ask you this, Tom, because you're around the NBA circles. why is it that everyone is ecstatic today that the Clippers lost? Because when I look at this team, has never had success. This is a franchise that has never had success. I don't know if it was the antics of Steve Ballmer during the press conference of Kawhi Leonard. I don't know if it's Doc Rivers. I don't know if it's Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams. I don't know what it is. Why in your mind is everyone thrilled, outside of Clipper fans, that this team went down last night?
Well, it's because everybody talked about how they're the foregone champions before the season started. Oh, it's Clipper. I mean, Clippers got the best team. And there's so many people that indicated that in regards to their talent. And believe it or not, one of those people was me. I scheduled them to go ahead and hoist that trophy. But I didn't realize that Doc Rivers would go into that kind of funk. But, yeah, so because when somebody is touting themselves as the best, and then they don't come out as the best, that's why everybody's down on them.
Yeah.
Same thing with, let's say, the Lakers.
Sure, sure.
You know, the Lakers, LeBron, he's got an ego as wide as the Grand Canyon. And he's made it pretty plain. Oh, it's ours. It's ours to lose. We're the ones. So if the Lakers lose, they'll be delighted, basketball fans, because a lot of people do not like LeBron. And unfortunately for LeBron and for, you know, the facts being the fact that he is a very talented player, unfortunately for him, it's not fair because they're judging him on his ego as opposed to his playing ability.
Yeah, but the big difference is, I mean, really, I was in the minority. I sat here the day the Lakers acquired Anthony Davis, and I'm not one to puff out my chest and say I told you so, because heaven knows I've been wrong a million times. But the day the Lakers acquired Anthony Davis, I said on this show, this team will win a championship. I was in the minority with that. And so going back to your point about a lot of the reason why people are happy about the Clippers, I think even if the Lakers were to beat the Clippers, there would have been jokes on Twitter and people would have been elated, just because we had to constantly hear it about a franchise that has never won anything.
Right, right, exactly. And of course, that everybody already crowned them before the season started.
Right.
Throughout the season, and Kawhi Leonard, this, that, and the other. And boy, did he come up short. So yeah, that's why people like to, you know, I mean, whether it's presidential races where people dislike a certain candidate, and you know, the candidate that loses, people will jump on that candidate for having lost. So it's just like that. When people tout somebody as the best, as this, as the second coming, and it doesn't happen, that's when people get on them.
Okay, do the Nuggets have a chance of beating the Lakers in a 7-game series?
Yeah, they do, and here's how I look at that. That as long as they don't have stars in their eyes, I mean, you know, Jokic, Michael Porter Jr., all those guys, Murray, they've seen LeBron and AD for years, and the bright lights of L.A. If you get intimidated by that, then they have no chance. But if they go into it like, I don't care Kawhi Leonard, I don't care Paul George, two MVP candidates, I don't care about Sixth Man of the Year, Lou Williams, but if they go into it like that, where they, okay, so there's LeBron, so there's AD, we don't care, then they have a chance in regards to the psychology of it all. Now, in regards to skill level, there's enough skill on the Denver Nuggets to beat the Lakers, no doubt, because the matchup they have in the middle in regards to Jokic, they don't really have a good matchup for that, not at all, just as the Denver doesn't have a real good matchup to LeBron or AD.
When I look at this game, when I look at it on paper, one of the things that stood out to me in the Clippers series is, okay, Jokic, if you're going to stop the ball in the middle of the paint, because Jokic can take the ball off of the perimeter, right? The defense stays in front of Jokic. You stop it. If he takes a step back to the perimeter, two steps back, you have to have a center that's fast enough, an athletic big, to follow him back to the top of the perimeter. And Zubac was not the guy to do it. And when you look at the Utah Jazz, Rudy Gobert is not the guy to do it. Rudy Gobert is going to defend inside the paint. He's going to alter the game completely different. When you look at the bigs for the Lakers, Anthony Davis can do that. Dwight Howard can do that. JaVale McGee can do that. That's what's interesting to me in this series. How do the Nuggets, because we've proven, the Lakers have proven, we have seen that they can guard the perimeter. They did it against Houston. They did it against Portland. They're doing it without Avery Bradley. And that was the big question mark to me. Now it's, can the bigs find a way to keep Jokic under control beyond the perimeter? Can you stop ball and get outside to defend a 25-foot jumper from Jokic? If the Lakers can do that, Tom, I think they win the series easily.
Maybe not, and I'll tell you why. Because Jokic has many weapons.
He does.
Including the pass. In other words, look, he scored 13 points last night, and he was actually still the best player on the floor. And that's because of his passing ability. In other words, if you think you got Jokic nailed down, suddenly he's got 11 assists. Oh, my God. And he finds guys exactly where they need to be found. So, in other words, stopping him from being a big-time scorer, that's not the whole ball of wax. They need to stop him from being a playmaker as well.
Well, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. And we definitely know who has the momentum right now. Tom Perkins, again, he is an independent NBA scout. He's also the founder and editor at HoopCityNews.com. Make sure you check it out. Tom joins us each week to talk NBA basketball. Tom Perkins, again, a pleasure, Tom. I appreciate the time, and I look forward to talking again next week.
I'm looking forward to it, too. We're going to have a lot of fun, exciting things to talk about with these two finals. Eastern and Western Conference Finals coming up. It's going to be really fun, Jordan.
Oh, it is.
And can't wait. I always look forward to hearing your great, effortless voice. You've got a voice like none other.
Thank you so much, Tom. That's a great compliment. I appreciate it.
All righty.
We're going to break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Time for some baseball talk here on Drive Time Sports. I know everything that's going on with the NFL, the NBA. Maybe it's easy to forget about Major League Baseball because, well, we're not quite to the playoffs yet, but I'll tell you, the playoff chases are definitely heating up, and we're going to talk about that more right now with our next guest, Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants, handling pregame and postgame shows. And Bill, as always, it is a pleasure. Thank you again for the time today.
Yeah, again, welcome in and enjoy the show. And baseball is coming to an end. A 60-game schedule is coming down to the last 10 to 12 days, and there's still some wild card spots open.
Yeah, and before we get into the way the standings look, Bill, I want to get your take on Major League Baseball and the bubble, with the Division Series, League Championship Series, and the World Series all being part of a bubble designed to really minimize the exposure of COVID-19. Your take on it, because, I mean, initially for me, I'm like, okay, well, we're looking at a 60-game season. We've expanded the playoffs, which gives teams that succeed during that 60-game season even less incentive to continue to control things late in the season. Now they don't even get home field. I understand the reasoning behind it, but in the same token, boy, there's really no reason to be a number one seed anymore.
You're absolutely right, and it really doesn't matter where you place as long as you get in the playoffs. And, you know, I just think the owners have put a circle around this and said this is the way we want it to happen. It's their millions upon millions of dollars they're going to get off the revenue, and they just wanted everything to be safe. And we look at the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, there really has not been any kind of positive test for COVID. And I think sometimes this is overextended, and now they're talking about bringing your friends in, your family in, and testing them for 7 days. I just think it's really, really out of place, and I would rather have it just stay like it is, travel the way you do it, and continue to have your home field advantage for your number one seeds as well as winners of each division.
Yeah, I mean, it really does not make a lot of sense to me. And then when you take a look at the playoff schedules with off days being eliminated for the divisional series and the league championship series, all of a sudden I believe that, you know, there's going to be a massive footnote next to the World Series champion here, because this will even affect how many pitchers teams will actually carry into the postseason. Everything just seems out of whack now in my mind, and maybe I'm overreacting, Bill, I don't know, but between the rule changes to 7-inning games opposed to 9-inning games for doubleheaders and putting a runner on second base, I can look past all that, but now the postseason, it really does nothing to benefit teams that have dominated during what's been a pretty trying year. And when you look at the COVID tests, for the most part, outside of the Marlins and the Cardinals, things have been okay.
It sure has, and I agree with you. I just think all these changes are really coming through the owners and Rob Manfred, and he's even talking about 2021 and possibly doing the same for the tournament or your playoffs at the end. When is it going to stop? The changes, are, it seems like this is continuing, and maybe the players' union needs to put a stop on this, because it's just not the way of baseball, and too many changes, I think you're going to get people turned off on this.
I agree. Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now as we talk Major League Baseball. Bill, let's take a look at the playoff picture. A team you and I discussed a couple of weeks ago, the New York Yankees, boy, they look like they're back on track. I mean, it looks like this team has transformed back into the team that we expected after a 3-week stretch where they were just awful. And we were wondering, are they even going to make the postseason? DJ LeMahieu looks like the DJ LeMahieu that we saw in Colorado all those years ago. Luke Voit, he became the first player at the top of the Yankees batting order to have 5 RBIs in the same game along with DJ LeMahieu. This team looks like they have found their rhythm once again.
Yeah, I agree with you with Stanton and Judge possibly coming back, and their injuries are now getting healed. I just don't like the excuses that they're making. Well, we're not going to come off yet until we're 100% okay of playing. You know, it's just too many excuses to get these people back on the field, especially with the money they're making. I just think the Yankees knew the last couple weeks they needed to go pedal to the metal, and they definitely have been playing very well. They beat the hell out of Toronto yesterday and putting up runs that we know they can put up. I just think they're going to be a team to rectify against, and whoever plays them in the middle of the pack, wherever they fall, is going to have a hard time in competing against the Yankees. We all know how much talent they have on it, and it seems like they've waited till the end of the 60-game season to try to put this all back together. A couple teams that are really playing well, the White Sox have definitely gone on course, and Abreu is just having an MVP year, and it looks like that could be a possible winner there. I just wonder about some of the teams in the American League. It sure has opened up. It looks like the top 8 are pretty much made. We talked about that last week. Really, nothing has changed. Maybe a couple different teams jumped the order, but I just don't see anybody else getting in that top 8.
Yeah, and as far as the White Sox are concerned, with there being no home field, right, I think that benefits the Yankees as well, because they're going to be in the middle of the pack, and we know what type of talent they have. But a team like the White Sox, when you're talking about not having a home field, maybe you got to lean a little bit towards who's playing hot baseball. This is a team that's won 10 out of 11 games, and I know that they were a sexy pick going into the season, but when you take a look at what they've been able to do offensively and just some of these stats, and we're going to talk about Abreu because he's outstanding, but I look at a guy like Tim Anderson at shortstop. Tim Anderson has logged over 160 bats, and Billy's still hitting .377 on the season. I mean, that's impressive.
It sure is, and there's a lot of additions to that team. You know, Dallas Keuchel, we just don't know how he's going to come back, if he's going to come back. The starting rotation, solid. A lot of young players, just like you said, Tim Anderson, and they're going to be thrown in the fire. It is going to see how they can compete under pressure if they are the number one seed. And you know what? We talked about it in the first segment here. The number one seed plays the 8 seed. Doesn't mean the 8 seed can't upset them in a best of 3. This is what, you know, why are you fighting to get a number one seed when you have to play the 8 seed in just 3 games? That could happen in the National League also. It's just going to be, you know, very, very experimental, and I say it that way. in a point of, is this really the way you want these playoffs to work, where your best team could be bounced in the best of three in the first round?
Yeah, and as far as I guess looking at 1 through 8, I mean, I have no doubt in my mind, Bill, when I watch National League Baseball, the two best teams are the Dodgers and the Padres, in my mind, in the National League. You can throw Atlanta in there. There's some injury concerns there. I worry about that rotation. The Cubs have come back down to earth after what was a hot start. I know they've won their last few games, but in my mind, it's the Dodgers and the Padres. These two teams could play in the second round. I don't have a problem with that.
You know, you're absolutely right. I've been watching the National League, you know, a little more than American League. Of course, I follow the Giants, and the Padres are for real. They got a stacked team. The Dodgers, we know, can they play up to the expectations that they should be playing? That's going to be the big question. Can Kenley Jansen deliver like he can? Watching last night's game, he loads up the bases and punches out the last two guys to end the game. But it could have easily been a base hit, and the game would have been tied. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's the closer that can capitalize for the Dodgers. I just don't know. But they sure have a lot of money and stake in him. And I just don't know if he's going to be that closer, that the dominant closer that we expect him to be. The Dodgers are up and down. They have not been consistently winning. They've had some injury. The Justin Turner's back. There's DHing. But on the other side, I watched the Padres this past weekend. They're strong. They're top to bottom in that lineup. Anybody can hit a home run. Anybody can be the hero on that team. And I just wonder if the Padres can overtake those Dodgers in any type of series.
Yeah, I wonder that as well. When you bring up Kenley Jansen, I think it's a great sticking point, because a guy that you are familiar with, Bill, being that he played in the Bay Area last season, Blake Treinen is a guy that I wonder maybe if Dave Roberts doesn't go to this guy as the closer when the postseason rolls around, because he's been better than Kenley Jansen. And then you take a look at the Kente Maeda trade. They bring in Brusdar Graterol. This is a kid that's throwing 100 miles an hour. They started him against the Astros. He had 3 putouts and 4 at-bats. So we know that there are options there. And despite the fact that Jansen's making $20-plus million, you have to wonder if at some point in time Dave Roberts pulls the plug and goes to either Treinen or Graterol as his new closer moving forward.
Yeah, you just wonder about that. Maybe as we get down to the last 10 games, they may try that, given an opportunity to see if either one of them could fit the shoe. If Jensen can't do it, and watching him, you know, the last couple outings, he's just not automatic throwing strikes. For one thing, he's 3-0, 2-0. He's behind hitters, and then the next hitter, he strikes the next guy out 3 pitches. The consistency isn't there with him. He's had some problems physically, mentally, and the arm. It just doesn't seem like he's bouncing 98, 99 like we know he can. And I think that's going to be the big question mark. If he fails, will they try someone new? And if he fails, is he going to be completely out of the closer spot?
And speaking of the Padres, I think we have to mention this as well. All this young talent that they have. And, Bill, I don't see any way that Cronenworth is not the National League Rookie of the Year. This kid leads the team in batting average right now, batting about .320. And this was a kid that came over as a side piece in the Tommy Pham deal. Right, that deal was all based around Pham. You get Cronenworth, this kid may be the NL Rookie of the Year. I don't see any way you can't give him the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, you know, they're looking at May, the starting pitcher for the Dodgers. I just don't think Cronenworth's playing every game. Last night, of course, he came up, bases loaded, 2 outs, and took a couple check swings, and he fell behind, and then he got him on a high fastball. I really was expecting him to get a hit. I just thought he was dialed in that whole game, hitting the ball hard, but it didn't go his way. Watching him otherwise, hitting in like the 7th spot in the lineup, what a place to have a guy like that and a possibility of hitting behind Will Myers and all these other stars, and he's doing well. I believe he is the National League Rookie of the Year in my mind, too, but he's a top-tier player, and they sure in the hell got a nice piece off a trade.
There is no question about it. Bill, before I let you go, is there a particular storyline that's standing out to you? I mean, be it a team, a player, maybe an aspect of what's ahead in Major League Baseball, something that's caught your attention?
Well, you and I have always talked about the Cincinnati Reds. The Cincinnati Reds are starting to win ball games. They're starting to play better. They're starting to hit the ball better. You got the bullpen finally putting zeros on the board. They have a relatively easy schedule for the next 2 weeks. I just think they have an opportunity to get in the 8th spot. as well as the Colorado Rockies, and I'm throwing that back to you with the Rockies. They beat a tough team yesterday against the Oakland A's. They're playing the Giants for four games next week, and I just think that eighth spot is not definite yet. And it could even be the seventh spot because Philadelphia isn't playing that well either. There's just too many holes in the National League wild card that teams could equally get in that last week or even down to the last weekend. That's the exciting point I'm looking for as the season continues, as we only have, like, say, 12, 13 games left with some of these teams. And I just think that's going to be changed once we get to the playoffs. I think the 7 and 8 seed are going to be newer teams that are going to get hot, maybe even the Milwaukee Brewers. We just don't know. Nobody's playing consistently to get 3 out of 4 wins or taking series. That's why I think the National League is going to be a bouncer at the end.
Yeah, and you bring up the Reds, and we can end with this because you're a pitcher. And I want the listeners to really think about this. You and I were complaining about the postseason and the format. Imagine having the first or second best record in the National League and getting the Cincinnati Reds in the first round and having to go up best 2 out of 3 against Sonny Gray, Trevor Bauer, and Luis Castillo. Think about that.
100% agree. And that's what we're talking about. What is a number one seed getting out of this? I don't know if I want to be a number one seed. I just don't know, because that's what you could contend with in the first round.
Yeah.
And literally get bounced out 2 out of 3 with some good pitching, some good bullpen, and a couple runs that could succeed into getting bounced out. And I look at the LA Dodgers. I think that's a team that could be bounced out. Look at how much, you know, trouble they had in the playoffs in the World Series. They're going to have to dominate, and they're going to have to score a lot of runs.
I agree.
I just don't know what the National League is going to come up with, but those bottom two seeds are going to be playing good baseball to get into the wild card, and that could just be pushed right into the playoffs. And guess what? We're going to have a hell of a playoff season if that happens.
No question. No question. Bill Lasky, again, former big league pitcher. Bill, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of you.
Yeah, at Lasky19, also doing pre- and post-games on KNBR, the sports leader out here in San Francisco. We have the Oakland A's series this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Pre-game starts at 9 p.m. out here, 9 a.m. out here in California. Doing pre- and post-games on those, a lot of great guests. And it should be a good series because Oakland A's and Giants are a good rivalry series. And you know, Oakland A's whooped them last time. They swept them 3 games, so hopefully the Giants can do something with the Mariners today and tomorrow, since it was suspended up in Seattle. And then they have a tough road toward the end. They got 3 against Oakland, 4 against Colorado, and 4 against Padres. So they have some tough baseball moving forward if they're going to get in this wild card position.
Bill, I always look forward to the conversations. Great stuff as always. Thank you so much, and I look forward to doing it again next week.
Yeah, and be safe, and have your listeners enjoy the show, and looking to always talking baseball with you, my friend, and take care of yourself.
Always great to get Bill Lasky on for his baseball segment each week. Good conversation. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Do not forget, you can also listen to Drive Time Sports on demand at CastleCountryRadio.com. For Travis Anderson, I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. I am out.